The following is rated R. It contains violence, adult language, nudity, and adult content.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome. It's 11 p.m. Eastern Time on Wednesday, March 18th, 2020, and thanks for joining us for part two of the 85th episode of the Rock and Roll Shrink Radio Show here on Blog Talk Radio. Special thanks to our host, NDB Media. I'm Casey Shapiro, and with me tonight is Dr. Stephen Mathis, a.k.a. the Rock and Roll Shrink. All righty. We will be taking calls from our listeners all evening during the show at 914-338-0314. You can also follow along in our live chat room on blogtalkradio.com as the show is happening. Before we begin, a couple quick disclaimers. This show does not constitute a doctor-client relationship, nor legal or medical representation of any kind. Also, the views expressed on this show are those of Dr. Mathis and Ms. Shapiro and are not an official stance on behalf of the psychological community or its peer vetting or regulatory bodies. And now, a topic-relevant bit of music played by Dr. Mathis himself. Take it away, Doc. As always, thank you for that. And if you would, please let us know the name of the song and the artist, and it's relevant to tonight's topic.
Okay, so that was kind of a deep cut. Excuse me, I like to do those every now and then. So that was a cut from the Let It Be record that the Beatles did, and that's a song called I Got a Feeling. So since we're talking about feelings and, you know, automatic kind of things, I thought it'd be kind of a nice semi-tongue-in-cheek intro for tonight's part two topic.
Fair enough. And I know that there's very few puns that you can pass up.
That's true.
Alrighty. Yes. As Dr. Mathis mentioned, tonight's episode is entitled ASMR, Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response Videos. And this is part two, which we'll discuss in a moment. Before we begin our topic discussion, though, let's first go to the Rock and Roll Shrink Recalls, a moment of rock music trivia stories as recounted by Dr. Mathis, if you would, sir.
So tonight I thought, what I would do is pay tribute to somebody that most people have probably never heard of, but they know a boatload of musicians who's played with this gentleman. So I'm going to talk tonight about the godfather of British blues, John Mayall, who started out born in the 33 in Cheshire, England. His father was a guitarist and jazz musician, so at a very, very early age, John was learning musical instruments. And for those people who don't know, he plays guitar, piano, harmonica, and does vocals, and then does a lot of writing. So Mayall started out playing jazz and then went into blues and has had quite a cadre of very famous musicians who played with him, and in some cases really boosted the career of a lot of very well-known musicians. So he started out originally doing kind of a blend of jazz and blues together, and playing with the Alex Korner band, and that's where he met drummer Huey Flint, who's played with a lot of folks, and Alex Korner and Cyril Davis, and eventually ended up getting a band where he played all blues. And so his first big foray sort of into the blues genre, if you will, was he's picking up different musicians from bands he played with, including Huey Flint and Roger Dean and these folks. But the big thing for him came in 65 when a guitarist who was playing for the Yardbirds decided to play for John Mayall's Blues Breakers, that person, of course, being Eric Clapton. And that sort of became the seminal record for him, which is John Mayall's Blues Breakers featuring Eric Clapton. And so Eric played with him until Cream was formed, which actually came out of the fact that Ginger Baker, the drummer for Cream, had set in on one of their gigs, and then he and Clapton were talking afterwards. He had approached Clapton by the band, and that was kind of the end of that kind of thing after a while. So eventually who replaced him was Peter Green. And at that time he had John McVie playing bass, who most people may or may not know the name, but he's still the current bass player for Fleetwood Mac. So a lot of
very... I was
about
to say, that last name is familiar.
Uh-huh. Well, you're going to hear a lot of people, you go, oh my God, I know those folks. Yeah, they got their start with John Mayall. So Peter Green, very famous blues guy, got his start with John Mayall. And eventually McVie left for a minute, and he was replaced by Jack Bruce, who at the time was playing for the Grand Palm organization, and switched over to John McVie, and that's just prior to him joining Clapton and Baker and Cream. So when Bruce leaves, John McVie comes back, and John McVie's been with him ever since. He's been the pretty much a steady blues breaker guy, a John Mayall guy, until he left to go to Fleetwood Mac. So he's had a lot of very famous folks. He's had Mick Fleetwood on drums. So, you know, Mick Fleetwood replaced Huey Flint. And so it's, you know, he's had just a cadre of folks. And over the, you know, over the years, different guitar players have come and gone. Different bass players have come and gone. He's had Paul Butterfield of Butterfield Blues Band playing harmonica with him. He's done records with him. He's had Mick Taylor come in, who replaced Peter Green when Peter Green left, to do a kind of a solo blues thing. And Peter Green, by the way, most people don't know, the original person who did the Green Man Alishi, the song that everybody knows by Judas Priest, that's not a Judas Priest song. That's a Peter Green song that he wrote when he was with Fleetwood Mac. Peter Green is also the author of Black Magic Woman, that he also wrote with Fleetwood Mac, that Santana made famous. Yeah. So we have quite a history here. So, you know, Peter Green also, you know, when he got Fleetwood Mac together, you know, that's when he got drummer Mick Fleetwood to come with him, who was playing with John Mayall. So the person that replaced Peter Green was Mick Taylor, who then left eventually to
like
go play for the Stones. Yes, that's correct. Who then left to go replace the guitar player at the time. I can't think of his name for the Rolling Stones, the original guitar player they had for the Rolling Stones, and I can't think of his name. He's the guy that drowned in the pool about 2 weeks after that.
I don't remember either. I've slept since then.
Yeah, and really, you know, so he's had a lot of people, and then, of course, Mick Taylor leaves to go play with the Stones, but he's had, you know, and of course, when Mick Fleetwood left, he got, you know, Huey Flint came back, or Keith Hartley, who's also a blues guy, came in his plate, has done a stint with Mayall. Dick Hextall Smith, who was a really talented saxophonist, who later left to form a band called Coliseum. That Clem Clempson, the guitar player, played with, who eventually left and went to filled Peter Frampton's place in Humble Pie when Peter Frampton left. Sean Heisman, All right, John Heisman, who's the other horn player in Coliseum, also started out with John Mayall. So, yeah, and actually Taylor left, I think, in 69, excuse me, to go with the Stones. But, you know, again, he's had a shoot ton of people. He's had saxophonists. So when the guys left to go for Coliseum, he replaced him with John Allman, who was a very famous saxophonist blues player. And he's accompanied people like Marianne Faithfull, for example. You know, he's had just all kinds of incredible people. Alan Price has played with him, doing all kinds of stuff. Harvey Mandel, who's another really good blues guitar player, has played with him. Larry Taylor, bassist, both of whom were from Canned Heat, played with John Mayall. Sugarcane Harris, a violinist who eventually ended up with Jefferson Starship. Yeah, John Mayall. Right? It's just he's had so many gosh darn people. And eventually he also has had Jerry McGee, as his guitar player at one point. And McGee is the guy that played with the Ventures, that everybody knows from the Ventures. So, I mean, he's had so many people play with him over the years. I mean, and of course, his current band is made up of a four-piece. It's Carolyn Wood, Wonderland on lead guitar and backing vocals, Jay Davenport, who's on percussion, Greg Zab on bass, and Mayall on vocals, keyboards, harmonica, and some guitar. But, you know, he's had John, as I mentioned, he's had John McVie, he's had Bernie Watson on guitar. He's had John McVie on bass. He's had Huey Flint on drums, Roger Dean on guitar, Clapton on guitar, Peter Green on guitar, Jack Bruce on bass, Ainsley Dunbar, who's, you know, played with everybody from Journey to, you know, Whitesnake to everybody else. Started has played done a stint with John Mayall, Mick Fleetwood, Keith Hardley, Mick Taylor, as I mentioned earlier, Dick Heffel-Smith, Andy Frazier. You know, who played with Free, played with him on bass, played John Mayall. John Heisman, who also played with Coliseum, was a drummer for John Mayall for a long time. As I mentioned, Johnny Allman on sax, Larry Taylor on bass, Sugarcane Harris on violin, excuse me, Harvey Mandel on guitar, Jerry McVie, who I mentioned. I mean, he's just had a number of crazy good musicians play with him and has really started a lot of these. Rick Vito, who's, you know, played with Fleetwood Mac on and off between Lindsey Buckingham and various other folks who played, has played with John Mayall. You know, he's just, he's had just a number of just monster players and just incredibly well-known folks who've gone on later to form, you know, their own bands or to play in very well-known bands like the Stones or, you know, Clapton with Cream or now on a solo career, or Jack Bruce or whatever. So Mayall is now, he's still playing. He's in his 80s. He's still playing. And he switched labels a couple of times. And, you know, when he did an 80th birthday gig, he had Mick Taylor came back and played with him. Clapton played with him. He had a bunch of folks coming in doing guest spots to play with him. He's had Gary Moore come in and play. He's played with, you know, Johnny Lang, Steve Cropper have come in and done little brief stints with him. So Steve Miller's played on stage with him, Billy Gibbons. I mean, this guy is a very well-known fixture, but a lot of people just don't know who he is because they, you know, unless you're a diehard blues kind of guy or gal, you may not have ever even heard of John Mayall. But he has really started and or contributed to the careers of a whole lot of people who have gone on to be a lot more famous than most people know that he is. But he's still around and still playing to this day. So I think that's a real testament to his talent and to his staying power, so to speak. So I definitely wanted to mention that because he's a guy that, you know, has just been around a block or two and really is the founder of the British blues movement back in the day. So he's the guy responsible for all this stuff. Well, there you have it.
Wow. And if I understand you correctly, he's still living. Is that correct?
Yeah, he's playing. He's still touring. Absolutely.
Wow. Good for him.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
What a great. All right.
Thank you
for that. Good for him. You know, hoping to keep playing a couple more decades at this point.
Absolutely.
All righty. So, again, we will take calls from our listeners and questions in the online chat room throughout the evening until around midnight. And please feel free to give us a call. Again, the number is 914-338-0314. So tonight's show is called ASMR, Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response Videos. And this is part two. ASMR videos, what are they? Why do they appeal to some people and yet really annoy others? And pro tip to our audience, Dr. Mathis is one of them, and I'm not far behind, but I'm trying to be fair. Is this just personal preference? Is it a psychological or physiological response? So ASMR, sometimes autosensory meridian response, is a tingling sensation that typically begins on the scalp and moves down the back of the neck and upper spine. A pleasant form of paresthesia, it's been compared with auditory tactile synesthesia and may overlap with frisson. While ASMR itself appears at best from the evidence we could find to be essentially pseudoscience, we have certainly covered such gray areas before on our show. For example, we did a show on Myers-Briggs personality type quizzes, which are also very much pseudoscience. Future research results may lend more credence to the ASMR practice in time. We will see. ASMR signifies a subjective experience of, quote, low-grade euphoria, characterized by a combination of positive feelings and a distinct static-like tingling sensation on the skin. It is most commonly triggered by specific auditory or visual stimuli and less commonly by intentional attention control. And by that, we mean like when you go to the barber or the spa and people are putting makeup on you or other cosmetics or massage or things like that, that kind of interaction, that's what that means. A genre of videos which intend to stimulate ASMR has emerged, of which over 13 million are published on YouTube. We will mention some studies, peer-reviewed papers, some of this we did last show, and other seemingly professional findings and remarks, but by and large, most if not all of them are compiling anecdotal data and surveys, not running claims through an empirical scientific method testing or debunking. There seems to be little or no clinical or medical information substantiating the phenomenon or showing its repeatable causes and results. So on our last show on March 4th, we discussed what exactly are ASMR videos and how ASMR, quote, works. Tonight, we will be discussing the history of ASMR and controversies, resources, and closing comments on the topic. Before we get started, I'm going to check in with you, Dr. Mathis, see if there's anything you want to mention.
Nope, I'm good.
Okay, and I'm going to give Dr. Mathis fair warning, as I did with last episode. First, I'm going to play for you guys a one-minute ASMR sound sampler grabbed from YouTube. Please understand that this is not like music, guided meditations, or anything else. It's a little bit like guided meditations, but not quite. There are also hundreds of ASMR artists employing hundreds of customized combinations of sounds, including talking, role play. That's a really big one, where they say, hi, I'm Becky, I'm going to put on your makeup today, and they talk to you like it's really happening. They gesture around the camera, and that's part of it for them. Music they employ, and more. This sound clip is just one brief example and comes quite short of demonstrating the whole genre, but I wanted you guys to have a small taste of it so you could kind of understand what we're talking about a little bit. Here we go. Red Dr. Rum. Mathis, feel free to take a potty break for a minute.
Red rum.
All right. Halfway done. Alrighty, I know I'm having some sensations, but they're not relaxing.
Yeah, I would not
and
disagree
with
that.
To be fair, the sound file that I pinched for that was basically where an artist who does this compiled like 100 sounds that are used in the genre and squished it into like 5 minutes. And typically there are not so many damn noises so close together and all of that. But I just wanted you guys to get a little flavor. It's kind of like a quick sampler. So, you know, I really was quite serious when I said this is only a taste of the genre and doesn't really express it how it's used out in the wild. So tonight let's talk about the history of ASMR. It's a fairly new phenomenon. So there's the history of the term and some bad assumptions and stereotypes about the genre. While many colloquial and formal terms used and proposed between 2007 and 2010 included reference to orgasm, there was during that time a significant majority objection to its use among those active in online discussions about it, many of whom have continued to persist in differentiating the euphoric and relaxing nature of ASMR from sexual arousal. And again, for our audience's understanding, kind of think about like a massage is sensual and you feel good and relaxed in ways that could be similar to some other things, but we're quite clear that massage is not sex. And that's kind of what they're gesturing at. Same thing here. However, the argument for sexual arousal persists. And some proponents have published videos categorizing as ASMrotica, you know, ASMR erotica, which are deliberately designed to be sexually stimulating. Early proponents of ASMR concluded that the phenomenon was generally unrelated to sexual arousal. In 2010, Jennifer Allen, a participant in an online forum, proposed that the phenomenon be named Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response. Allen chose the words intending or assuming them to have the following specific meanings. Autonomous, to be spontaneous, self-governing, with or without control. Sensory, pertaining to the senses or sensation. Meridian, signifying a peak, climax, or point of highest development. And response, referring to an experience triggered by something external or internal. Allen verified in a 2016 interview that she purposely selected these terms because they were more objective, comfortable, and clinical than alternative terms for the sensation. In that interview, Allen explained that she selected the word meridian to replace the word orgasm and said she had found a dictionary that defined meridian as a point or period of highest development, greatest prosperity, or the like, end quote. And the source for this next part was thinkwithgoogle.com. Coined in 2010, ASMR is a relaxing, often sedative sensation that begins on the scalp and moves down the body. Also known as brain massage, it's triggered by placid sights and sounds such as whispers, accents, and crackles. The contemporary history of ASMR began on 19th October 2007 on a discussion forum for health-related subjects at a website called Steady Health. A, at the time, 21-year-old registered user with the handle, okay, whatever, submitted a post describing having experienced a specific sensation since childhood comparable to that stimulated by tracing fingers along the skin, yet often triggered by seemingly random and unrelated non-haptic events such as watching a puppet show or being read a story. Replies to this post indicated that a significant number of other people had experienced the sensation which OK Whatever described, also in response to witnessing mundane events. The interchanges precipitated the formation of a number of web-based locations intended to facilitate further discussion and analysis of the phenomenon, for which it was plentiful anecdotal accounts, yet no consensus agreed name nor any scientific data or explanation. Earlier proto-history. Austrian writer Clemens Setz, S-E-T-Z, suggests that a passage from the novel Mrs. Dalloway, authored by Virginia Woolf and published in 1925, describes something distinctly comparable. In the passage from Mrs. Dalloway cited by Setz, a nursemaid speaks to the man who is her patient, deeply, softly like a mellow organ, but with a roughness in her voice like a grasshopper's. I found that kind of weird, which rasped his spine deliciously and sent running up into his brain waves of sound, end quote. Biological basis not yet proven but suspected. There is no known sources about any evolutionary origins for ASMR since it has yet to be clearly identified as having biological correlation. Even so, a significant majority of descriptions of ASMR by those who experience it, or claim to, compare the sensation to that precipitated by receipt of tender physical touch, providing examples such as having their hair cut or combed. This has led to the conjecture that ASMR might be related to the act of grooming. For example, David Huron, professor in the School of Music at Ohio State, states, the ASMR effect is clearly strongly related to the perception of non-threat and altruistic attention and has a strong similarity to physical grooming in primates who derive enormous pleasure bordering on euphoria when being groomed by a grooming partner, not to get clean, but rather to bond with each other, end quote. Imaging suspects' brains with fMRI, and I don't know what the F stands for in that, as they reported experiencing ASMR tingles, suggests support for this hypothesis because brain areas such as the medial prefrontal cortex associated with social behaviors, including grooming, and the secondary somatosensory cortex associated with sensation of touch were activated more strongly during tingle periods than control periods. And I'm going to pause here and check in with you, Dr. Mathis, for extra comments.
I'm good.
Okay. All right, the next part, last part that we want to talk about is controversies, resources, and closing. This first part I'm going to talk about, the source for this is shape.com. And there was a post, why do just some people feel it? There's probably a neurological nuance for why certain people experience ASMR, a stronger neural connection between auditory and emotional areas, for example, and potentially some personality parameters. But from what's currently known now, there's no real rhyme or reason for why some feel the tingles and others don't. The quote says Poerio, who's earlier in the article, but I didn't use that other part. It wasn't really relevant. The ASMR Research and Support Organization, which is trying to kickstart scientific research on the phenomenon, puts sensation seekers into two categories. Type A is relaxed by their own thoughts, like meditation. The more common type B relies on something external to stimulate their euphoria, like listening to a pen scratch on paper or a whispering voice. The latter is so common that ASMR is sometimes referred to as whisper therapy. Controversies. The controversial kid ASMR community. The videos which use quiet sounds to trigger, quote, tingles, can be a type of sensory play. But some outside the community and at YouTube worry that child-made ASMR skirts the edges of inappropriate content. I've looked at some of these videos. I can see where they're concerned. I don't know how much of it is warranted yet. Certainly what I saw on those videos is not any worse than things children have done in movies or in music. Let's put it in perspective that way. Kid ASMR videos have a slightly different feel than their adult counterparts. Though both have elements of comfort and creativity, many kid ASMR videos skew playful and silly. Kids seem less likely to make videos featuring massage, for example. Many popular kid ASMR videos involve slime, eating snacks such as seaweed or sour candy, or variations on the theme of mean older sister does your makeup. Some kids seem like they're just playing a pretend game with a camera trained on them. And that, from what I saw, is very true. Others have the polished charisma of a grown-up TV personality. Some are teenagers, such as Gracie Kay and McKenna, 13, of Life with Mac, a channel with more than 1 million subscribers. Others are much younger, such as the 4-year-old Aoki, the star of ASMR Toddler. These channels all have parental involvement. McKenna even got her mom to create her own ASMR account, Life with Mama Mac. Adults may enjoy kids' ASMR as well. Many people say they first experienced the feeling as children, and the videos may evoke nostalgic childhood memories. Katrina Ray Heston says the sight and sound of her children playing pretend games trigger the feeling. Quote, "It's usually the most intense form I experience," she posted in response to a question I posed, and that being the OP, not me personally. "I posed on an ASMR discussion group on Facebook, but she doesn't seek out ASMR made by kids online because it makes her feel uncomfortable. She is not alone in her discomfort. The whispering, the pretend closeness, the simulation of touch, it makes plenty of people squirm, even coming from ASMR videos made by adults. Some people find it inappropriate for children to be performing that sort of manufactured intimacy or worry that it could expose them to harassing comments. Sadly, creeps are a real concern. Child-made ASMR videos raised alarms for YouTube when the company started seeing more of them about a year ago, says Jessica Mason, the policy and copyright communications lead at Google, which owns YouTube now. She says the company has consulted psychiatrists and ASMR experts who have said that people seek out ASMR to help with insomnia, anxiety, and stress. But the company has still been wary. Though ASMR isn't necessarily sexual, it is inherently sensual and sometimes pushes up against the blurry line of what can be considered inappropriate. The company monitors any content featuring minors, Mason said. But ASMR in particular gave them pause. Adult ASMR sometimes does veer into sexual territory with intentionally seductive videos and girlfriend or boyfriend role plays. Quote, ASMR can bleed into content that seems to sexualize minors, Mason said. Excessively focusing on the mouth, close-ups, things like that. It's a tricky line because we welcome ASMR. We know there are benefits to it, but we can't let everything through. We never have good data on what kids are doing because of all the restrictions around studying kids, researching kids. And by that, she means, you know, it's very difficult for them to do any kind of scientific measuring in this because there's an awful lot of extra permissions involved when you are using minors in an experimental setting like that, which means it pretty much doesn't happen a whole lot. And then there are the comments. Over the past several months, according to Mason, YouTube has noticed a disturbing phenomenon of commenters on videos of children, usually innocuous videos such as home movies or gymnastics performances, making inappropriate remarks, comments about their appearance, timestamps, highlighting brief moments where a child appears to be in a compromising position or flashing some skin. And you'll probably see stuff like this, like if they're doing gymnastics and they do the splits and somebody's got something fresh to say in those few seconds. Mason says YouTube has trained machine learning devices and human monitors to comb through videos for incriminating content. They flag and delete comments, disable accounts, and report thousands of accounts to authorities. After discovering thousands of offending comments, the company decided to disable comments entirely on any videos featuring a minor until it can find a better solution to the problem. This took effect in January 2020. It is my personal opinion that anytime anyone, youth or adult, takes to social media and puts themselves out there as an internet personality or even self-made celebrity, they will be inviting trolls, stalkers, sexual harassers, and other forms of abuse. I am absolutely not saying that they deserve it simply for existing, but more saying that public access and attention attracts crazies and self-righteous zealots. My larger point is that most of the above problems I see as a problem to be dealt with for ASM artists, but not at all a flaw or failing of the genre. I'm actually going to pause here and see if Dr. Mathis has anything he wants to jump in with before the next section.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is, and I would agree with that, I think that, you know, if certain people can find a way to muck something up that other folks find enjoyable or relaxing or whatever, they're going to do it because it's just the nature of some folks' personality. And I don't think that is a problem that is limited to this phenomenon at all. It's something that unfortunately happens in a lot of different arenas, and where the actions of a few folks will kind of spoil it for the rest of the people who are, you know, have otherwise beneficent ideas about things.
Yes, absolutely. And I can't remember which episode it is, but you and I have done an episode on the psychology of online bullies and trolls and that sort of thing. So if you guys go to our Facebook page and you look down the master list, that episode may have some more helpful commentary on the nature of, you know, psychology of trolling, why people feel the need to do that crap. So, all right. The next section is another controversy. PayPal, FOSTA, and that's an acronym, FOSTA, and sex trafficking laws gone wrong. Why PayPal's crackdown on ASMR creators should worry you. This is an article from Engadget.com, September 14th, 2018. This past week, and back to that date, non-sexual ASMR video creators Sharon Dubois, who is in charge of ASMR Glow, Scottish Murmurs, Creative Cal, and Rose ASMR, these are all ASMR artist accounts, have been permanently banned from PayPal and had their funds frozen for 180 days, and I could not find any evidence they ever got that money back. Like with YouTube's July censorship sweep, the woman created videos of sound effects and have been expelled from the payment utility under alleged violations of the company's sexual content policy prohibitions. ASMR community websites are now warning all creators to avoid PayPal. Engadget reached out to PayPal regarding the banning of ASMR video creators, the 8chan sex harassment campaign, and let me explain that for those of you who don't know. Many of you have heard about Anonymous, the group. People think they're hacktivists now, and they're not, but it's people not knowing enough about the whole story. This began on a chat that was called 4chan, and it would take too long to explain why it's named that, but they were places that you could go on a forum to chat about images, and it started over in Japan and then came to the United States, and 4chan was supposed to be about that. And it devolved into other things, mostly because it got overrun by trolls. So 8chan is another chat that is like that. And in the years since it formed and got infested, and then the feds got involved and it impersonated infestors, and the whole thing is just blown out of control now. It's just a giant toilet. And they engage in a lot of harassment campaigns of various people online, on Twitter, whatever, you know, media personalities. So 8chan had a sexual harassment campaign where trolls got together and targeted somebody, and that's what that refers to. And I'm explaining this because I'm sure many of our listeners, and I know Dr. Mathis, don't know anything about the culture of those troll chats, so I figured I would help you understand. And then PayPal – yes, thank you. How PayPal plans to protect users from this kind of abuse, but we did not hear back before publication time, and that was in 2018. There was an update to this later at the end of the article. PayPal responded eventually with the following statement, quote, "Customer service and the positive resolution of buyer and seller issues are an important focus for PayPal. Our customer service team is always available to help customers understand our policies to ensure compliance. Additionally, PayPal has no policy against autonomous sensory meridian response-related content that does not otherwise violate PayPal acceptable use policy. And I should note, some of that policy in recent years has punished a lot of people who produce erotica or other adult content, even though it's by adults, for adults, doing legal adult things. PayPal has targeted them, and what you're kind of seeing here is a non-answer, meaning we're still going to screw with people and then make up that it's about our rules, but it's really not. So this thing hasn't really been solved yet. So that's what makes it a controversy related to that. Another article, March 2018, also from Engadget.com. The Senate has passed the Stop Enabling Sex Trafficker Act, or SESTA, and tacked on FOSTA, Allow States and Victims to Fight Online Sex Trafficking Act, by a vote of 97-2. Sounds good on the surface, doesn't it? Lawmakers did not fact-check the bill's claims, research the religious neocons behind it, nor did they listen to constituents. significant organizations, including the Department of Justice, ACLU, EFF, Electronic Frontier Foundation, and more, have assembled to object to the bill, both publicly and in letters to elected officials. In the process, law professors and anti-trafficking groups, along with sex work organizations, unearthed the bill's many alarming legal, constitutional, and human rights disqualifications. It's dubbed the anti-trafficking bill for the internet, but it is really an anti-sex sledgehammer. The bill removes protection for websites under Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act and makes sites and services liable for hosting what it very, very loosely defines as sex trafficking and, quote, prostitution content. FOSTA / SESTA puts into law that sex work and sex trafficking are the exact same thing, and makes discussion and advertising part of the crime. Its blurry interpretation of sex and commerce, as well as the bill's illogical, incorrect conflation of trafficking and work, is straight out of a bad movie. And this has had an effect on ASMR accounts, not only just with PayPal, with YouTube, and anywhere they're online. They are being harassed by this bill, which is today still in effect, has not yet been overturned. Last controversy, somewhat related. Source is Yale Law School, December 27, 2018. In Woodhull Freedom Foundation versus U.S., EFF argues that the act is unconstitutional because it surpasses protected speech and induces censorship. This case implicates Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, CDA 230, which allows websites to assert editorial control over third-party content without exposure to liability. CDA 230 enabled the internet as we know it. Without the statute, platforms like YouTube, Facebook, and Wikipedia would have to censor their content extensively to avoid crippling litigation. Although CDA 230 includes exceptions for federal criminal actions and intellectual property rights violations, it gives service providers the leeway to curate platform content without risking liability. In a generic sense, you want that, but this phenomenon has been mistreated. FOSTA carved away at this decades-long protection by imposing federal criminal and civil liability on those who own, manage, or operate an interactive computer service and host content with the intent to, quote, promote or facilitate the prostitution of another person, among other liability expansions. The law was passed earlier this year, meaning 2018, after the online classifieds platform Backpage.com was shut down by the Justice Department for enabling prostitution and sex trafficking. The website claimed immunity under CDA 230. However, in line with past cases against similar websites, the government charged Backpage for using a facility in interstate commerce to knowingly enable prostitution. All right, that is the end of the controversy section. And I'm going to check in with you, Dr. Mathis, to see if there's anything else you'd like to add here.
While I certainly find this phenomena irritating from a personal perspective, this, to me, smacks of witch hunting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's bordering on handmade jail.
Yeah, it's Big Brother's watching, and I'm vehemently opposed to any of that kind of thing regardless. I mean, just because I don't like something doesn't mean it's bad or wrong or whatever. And I suspect that this is very much in line with music tastes, in that some people are just interested in certain kind of music and other folks find it abhorrent. And, you know, likewise, those folks that find certain music tastes abhorrent like certain kinds of music that the folks – that other folks don't like. And so it's like, okay, well, there's no real right or wrong. It's just, you know, you like Frank Sinatra and somebody else likes Led Zeppelin. Big deal. Okay, great. You know, and I think what we're doing is we're punishing things that we don't like or don't understand or don't approve of. And I think that that's really horrific, frankly.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. And, you know, to me, this is kind of like the PMRC of relaxing
yep,
videos.
That's exactly what I was a-thinking. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
And
you know, and the PMRC was a body that was hugely misinformed, you know, and hugely ridiculous and, you know, had all these allegations that none of which were true, mostly coming out of these so-called religious right, which in my personal opinions were headed by a bunch of nutcases who didn't know their assets from holes in the ground. And, you know, and I heard some of these people make speeches about stuff. I mean, there was a big Billy Graham speech who basically denigrated, for example, the Doobie Brothers song, "Jesus Is Just All Right," for assuming that the "just all right" meant, he's all right, he's just all right, when he completely misunderstood the slang term "just all right," which means, wow, this person's awesome. So really, you're going to go out like an idiot and make comments you don't know a damn thing about and slam a band who's actually venerating Jesus Christ, and you're going to slam them for that because you're an idiot and don't understand it? Go away.
Yeah.
And that's kind of
well,
how I feel.
There's a slight irony to all of that. The founder of the PMRC was Al Gore's now ex-wife, Tipper Gore, who is a Democrat.
Yeah,
that's maybe why she's the ex, but I don't want to turn this show political.
Yeah, I want to call that a gory situation.
Oh, puns. Puns are bad. We've talked about this. Oh, Lord. Okay.
And on that note, right?
Yes, I found that ironic that somebody who was such a figure in the, you know, vicariously by extension in the Democratic Party started all of that foolishness, which is not something we usually associate with them. But, you know, there are some. So
yes, ma'am.
Definitely, at any rate, you know, one of the biggest controversies about this is some of the laws that have been twisted and as of tonight are currently in the same state of they haven't been overturned and they're still being twisted. And affecting ASMR and a lot of other related phenomenon, both in media and, you know, personal service and all this other kind of stuff. So we are sitting now with this still in chaos for this evening. So in summary, we hope now that our listeners understand more about ASMR videos and how they can be a choice for relaxation, meditation, or even self-therapy for some people. The proverbial jury is still out on how legitimately scientific this medium is in its claims, but we encourage our listeners to find out if it appeals to them personally, and for now decide for yourselves if it has any value for you. Perhaps eventually the scientific proof will come together. So this concludes our show on that topic, and I'm going to check in with you again, Dr. Mathis, see if there's anything overarching with the whole topic that you want to add in.
So what I'll say is this, you know, whether this is scientifically quote-unquote provable or a bunch of sheep dip, if it makes people feel better, do it. If it's not hurting somebody else, you know, okay, you know, what's the problem? You don't like it, don't listen to it. I mean, come on. You know, we're back to the censorship thing again. It's like, you know, I don't look, I'm not a big pornography guy, but, you know, I know people who are, and that's fine. If you are, go look at it, and if you don't look at it.
Yeah. Exactly. So, on behalf of myself, Dr. Mathis, and NDB Media, we want to thank our listeners this evening and also give our appreciation to those of you who may be joining us later via podcast, iTunes, etc. So we will see you guys in 2 weeks with a new topic for discussion on Wednesday, April 1st, April Fool's. No, we'll really actually be there. I promise we're not trolling you. At 11 p.m. Eastern Time right here on blogtalkradio.com. We'd also like to give a shout out to other NDB Media shows that are coming up in the next couple of weeks. So Travel Itch Radio tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Find out why the Winston Churchill Museum is in Fulton County, Missouri, when Renee Graham visits Travel Itch Radio. Listen live on iTunes or blogtalkradio.com as Dan Schlossberg and Keita Roberts interview Renee about the world-class museum and other attractions in her mid-Missouri location. This Saturday, Sports Talk with the Guys, Saturday Morning Extravaganza, March 21st, 9 a.m. Eastern Time. The Monday Morning Quarterbacks are live on Saturday morning. No one is safe while we troll the digital airwaves. Join us as we discuss the latest news in the world of sports and review the events of the past week. No fantasy sports here. We keep it real. You need to remember we kill brain cells, and as such, we must just be the purveyors of the zombie apocalypse. You have been warned. Roger wrote this copy. I did not. So that's up to him with NDB Media head Roger Noriega. So that's Saturday morning. And then Sunday evening, the 22nd, The Walking Dead online viewing party, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. This coming Sunday, Season 10, Episode 13, What We Become, which will be Michonne's exit episode for those of you who do watch the show. And the following weekend, on Sunday, March 29th, also 8:30 p.m., Season 10, Episode 14, Look at the Flowers. And I have a special wave for that that I don't get to use a whole lot, so I like to pull it out when I can.
Just look at the flowers.
Now, one of my favorite episodes, The Grove, from Season 4. So, hope you guys can catch some of our sister shows. Please look for us on Facebook, on Twitter, on iTunes, and at www.rockandrollshrink.com. Good night, everybody. Thanks for joining us, and rock on.